Welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, the West Coast machine rolls on. GWS, is Leon Cameron the coach under the most pressure? And the win Fremantle had to have.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, Tuesday morning, Duff and Quarters. It's time for the podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Glenn, another fascinating round of fixtures and winners and losers. What are you making of the AFL competition in 2008?
Two cracking games, bookended really. Well, not bookended, but the showdown. What a finish. Hawthorn Sydney was pretty good too. You had a kid in his third game playing one of the great games in recent times. No one kicks seven anymore, really. And this kid kicks it in his third game with 10 tackles and pressure racks all over the place. Great game, that one, but showdown, wow, what a brilliant game. And I just scratched my head. Were the players not watching last week? I mean, is it now fair game to just go around touching umpires left, right and centre?
Maybe it's just been going on since Noah was a kid we just haven't been noticing it.
Well, I'm tipping the Curno TV is on the blink. Both of them guilty. Well, both of them were charged. So
And Stephen May. I mean, fair dinkum, using the umpire as a demonstration.
And gets off.
Yes.
I'm just not sure if you're Tommy Hawkins, you're sort of wondering what's going on. You don't use the umpire.
You know what that tells me?
What?
They want Stephen May to play.
Of course they do.
And just like they wanted Trent Cotchin to play in the grand final last year.
Exactly. Although having said that, there was an incident over the weekend, and
Mike
I did
Parker.
Say to myself, if he goes for a week, then you'd have to ask the question about Trent Cotchin. So, yeah, you're right. I wouldn't disagree with that. I think that the Stephen May decision is curious.
Well, I would have had it graded higher than the Hawkins one.
I would have too. There was a bit of force involved, and I know he was. Yes, he was trying to explain the action, but there was a bit of force there. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
And the same with the Curnos. Can't do it. All deserve a week, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless you're going to Shanghai and it's important for the AFL, in which case...
You get off.
All right, Quarters, I reckon the showdown was the game of the season.
Yeah, that's really fair. Yeah, I couldn't dispute that. What a great finish. And really, if you look at the finale to it, all the players they recruited played a major role. You had Motlop kicking the goal. I think Jack Watts bobbed up in the last quarter with significant plays. And Rockliffe played his part too. So, you know, I think that everyone that they recruited over there, I'm not saying they're going to be the panacea for Port's flag, but I'm saying that they all played a significant role. Adelaide didn't do too much wrong either. Interesting, the final play too. A lot of talk about Adelaide's defensive structures. Adelaide saying we thought it was just the bounce that led to that play. So really, just those games, you're almost breathless when the final siren goes with those games.
And McGovern probably. So Mitch McGovern played a major role.
A cracking mark.
In the two final plays. Magnificent mark. Ice cool shot at goal.
Has done it before too.
Too much courage, Quarters. Going back, like crashed into his teammate.
Yes,
caused the spill. The Adelaide players ended up on the ground and Motlop stayed on his feet. Sometimes you've just got to trust your teammates to give the contest, get the ball forward and be the person to mop up. I'm not saying you would have got it, but they had no one left standing at ground level.
I was going to say, I'm not prepared to. I know, I get your point. You're right. But I'm not.
All with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah, I mean, and also, I'm always going to applaud courage like that, always. And I'd say encourage it, not discourage it. But you've also got to think on your feet a bit. And he needed to think on his feet.
Not laying down with the wind knocked
exactly.
out of him.
But, you know, you could point, as they say, you could point to a million or a thousand incidents during a game. But, you know, what a great game. Sometimes you are privileged to watch this great game of ours.
And what about, you talked about Ben Ronke, obviously, on Friday night. What about Robbie Gray's third quarter in the showdown? If you're talking about turning games on their head, five goals in a quarter, and I've always thought this, but the showdown reinforced it. They started this season with Travis Boak playing high half forward and Robbie Gray playing midfield. It has to be the other way around.
Yep.
Robbie Gray is too dangerous near goal.
He is, yes.
To have him in the midfield. I know he's a very good midfielder, and by all means send him in there when you need him, when you need a spark. but you've got to have him forward or centre. He's just too dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. One of the players of the competition on his day, really, one of the best players in the competition in terms of his ability to influence a game, Robbie Gray.
Yeah.
Terrific performance. 6 goals in the end, I think. So
kick 6.
Pretty good in a high intense game like that.
And what did you make of the Hawthorn Sydney game on Friday night? Now, you did send me a text to apologise for talking to me to change my tip.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming you. I was so dialed out of that one, I didn't even know where the game was played. So yeah. I'm accepting full responsibility for that, but that was a cracking game as well.
What I made of it, I don't think Hawthorn did too much wrong. By the way, while we're talking up the youngster, Jack Gunston's game is pretty special too. 5 goals in a game like that is pretty good return as well. Jack Gunston having some sort of a year. Sydney was tougher for longer. There were some decisions that didn't go Hawthorn's way, but you always get those decisions. I think Sydney was just tougher for a little bit longer. Hawthorn, not too much to concern for Hawthorn. I thought it was still a pretty good performance. Interestingly, Sydney away from the SCG again performing. So
it's going to be interesting. So Fremantle's form on the road is dreadful. They play Sydney at the SCG on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
If Sydney aren't convincing winners in this, we're going to start to ask the question, what the hell is going on with Sydney and their home ground, aren't we?
We are going to ask that question. I think we already are, given their performances at the SCG.
So you come up with an explanation for me. They still look hard at the ball. They still look good in close. You know, in their big win, the come-from-behind win against Geelong, they were monstrous around the ball in the last quarter.
Yeah, all grounds similar. It's not similar to the SCG, though. Maybe their big bodies, they've relied on in the past, are slowing down in terms of four-quarter performances, and Sydney's custom-made for that game plan. And I think maybe the ground at this stage of their careers, as you pointed out a few weeks ago, you know, the new way of coming through are a different body shape.
Yeah, so Haywood's a really good player, but but he's a slim build, isn't he? Heaney's an excellent player. I would argue Heaney's going to be a super contested player, but he's still only, about 20 years old.
He's super contested player. He'll get some injuries because he goes pretty hard at it, but we don't want to discourage that. Callum Mills is another. They're not big bodies, so I think that's probably the answer. I'm not prepared. I reckon I think they might have a bit of a convincing win this week, though.
Well, I do too. I mean, if you look at Fremantle may get Michael Walters back, which would be a big in. They may get Stephen Hill back, which would also be a big in. But if you look at their team that took the field against St Kilda in a good win, but it was a patchy performance. 7 under 12 games, 12 under 40 games.
Yeah.
That's not the sort of team you want to take to the SCG to play the Swans.
No, but it's the sort of team you should take because it will expose them and experience them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you never know. You never know. Roll the dice.
Okay, what else caught your eye at the weekend, Quarters? What did you like?
Clarko v. the Horse. Old teammates having a crack at each other, which is interesting. I think Clarko's entitled to his opinion, but he's probably got a point when you're having private meetings with Gil McLaughlin as an AFL coach. I'm not sure about that. And also, maybe a little bit of hypocrisy. I don't think Sydney's the only team that blocks. But look, what also caught my eye at the weekend, I think West Coast, I'm still not quite convinced of, but, you know, they've done nothing wrong. But I tell you what I am convinced about is GWS have got some problems, and I know they've still got players out. But they had more top 10 and 20 draft picks in the side than West Coast did last weekend, and it was at home. So I'm concerned about GWS this year now.
Yep, I am too. I'm absolutely convinced about West Coast. West Coast will finish top 4 quarters. You can write down the date and you can quote me on that.
Okay.
They will be in the top 4 at the end of the season. The thing about a coach's method is that nothing tests it more than injuries, because you have to bring in personnel and you have to see how well your depth players are drilled down to carry out the method. Now, my problem with GWS, and this is my problem with Leon Cameron, and I think Leon Cameron should be the coach under the most pressure.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
In the AFL.
Well, there's another one he's under a little bit, but I would agree with that.
There is complete absence of method.
Yep.
Now, so what that brings you back to is this still just a bunch of talented young teenagers? Talented young players just expressing their talent, and that's basically it.
I'd agree with that. I think the great teams, the premiership teams are where talent meets method.
Yeah,
they meet somewhere in the middle, and Richmond's proven that by tailor designing a game plan to suit their body types and their player types. Hawthorne did the same with skill, great method. I just don't think the method is there at this point.
And you look at the contrast on Saturday at Spotless Stadium was now. West Coast only really has three injuries, but they're three big injuries. You know,
three outs.
Nui, Shuey and McGovern.
Big outs.
They're three as strategically important players.
Let's throw Sheed in there too.
Sheed, yep.
So probably top 10, 12 player, maybe higher than that. I might be being unfair, but certainly arguably three of their best players, and then another who's really significant.
Well, it's three of their top six,
yep.
And it's four of their top 15.
Yep.
And West Coast's method survived that personnel change.
It did.
Didn't they? And they actually stipulated, and this was mentioned on the telecast before the game, Ainsworth was told, you have to come in and play the Shuey role. And Schofield, you know, basically had to play the McGovern role, and Lysette had to become the lead ruckman, and McInnes had to become what Lysette's been. And their method survived.
Yep.
And all their key players in all their key roles, you know, look at their halfbacks, because no line is more dependent on how your team functions than your halfback line. If your halfback line is good and your midfield competes and your structures hold up, your halfback line will play the way they normally play. And if that doesn't happen, then what happens is your halfback line gets subjected to all the things that go wrong up the field and they can't stop anything. West Coast halfback line survived. And Hearn played well, and Brad Shepherd just continues to play well. Tom Barris played well because their method survived. And GWS is just completely absent now.
And up the other end, Jack Darling continues his rich vein of form. 22 goals this year now. We could be looking at a 60-goal season from Jack this year again.
Which would be fantastic. He's had a 50-goal season. He's had three 40-goal seasons, I think. So Jack Darling has been a very maligned player. We've mentioned it on this show before. I've always said it's been unfair. I think that what's happened with Jack Darling, he had such a strong start to his career, people simply thought he would elevate from that. And the reality is he was a very mature bodied player when he came in. But this is career best.
If you look back over the years, if you know you've got a forward playing a second forward role and you're kicking two to three a game, what's not to be happy about? And that's what he's done. He has produced that. Even when he's struggling, he's still managed to produce goals.
Exactly. He's had two bad moments in two big games.
Yep.
There was the one when he didn't go, when he had to go against the Western Bulldogs in the elimination final in Perth. And there was the one when he was looking into the sun and he dropped the chest mark when West Coast were coming hard in the grand final against Hawthorn. People haven't forgiven him for that. They're two moments over a 159-game career. That's basically produced, well, pretty much bang on two goals a game. And as you've mentioned, second forwards that kick that two goals a game are valuable. But Quarters, what's happening now is because West Coast, if you criticise their forward setup before, it would have been that they were too predictable because they went to Kennedy too often. Well, now they're not. Because Darling's playing so well, Kennedy's had an interrupted build-up, so he's not as dominant. Darling's playing better, and they're less predictable. They're harder to stop going forward, and they're a better team as a result.
What I love him, and it's something he's done over his career, but this year he's doing it a lot more. He's crashing packs. And if I'm an opposition defender, I'm worried when I go walk up to that West Coast Eagles forward line. I'm thinking I'm going to be sore at the end of today, and that's good.
Yeah.
That's the doubt you should have in your mind as a defender, I think, if the opposition forward line's worthy, and I think they really are worthy at the moment.
Absolutely. As I said, I've got no doubt West Coast will be top four by the end of the season. But barring some rash of injuries in the back half of the year, I think that West Coast will finish in the top four. I think that they're halfway through their tough month, and then after that, the draw gets pretty moderate for them.
Yep. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh, a bit cautious. Let's call it cautious.
Well, I trust them because I see the method. You know, and on this show before, we've talked about whether we trust teams or not. You're starting to trust Melbourne because you see the critical statistics.
I am. I'm starting to trust West Coast.
Yeah.
Well, there is trust there. We'll find it. Sunday's going to be some sort of a game when Richmond come over here to play Optus Stadium. So it's going to be some sort of a game.
And this is I reckon this is simply a case of a where it is game. So yep. It's here, I'll be tipping West Coast.
It's a where it is, I'll be tipping West Coast because it's here. It's definitely a where it is game for West Coast. I don't think there's much doubt where it is with Richmond at the moment. They are playing team, beautiful team football.
Yeah.
And it survives.
Yeah.
Through not only, I'm not sure they've been playing that well and they're still winning. You know, so Richmond are going to take some beating this year, that's for sure. The other one at the weekend was Essendon-Carlton. Enormous amount of pressure now on Essendon, and we've already seen a casualty since the weekend in Mark Neild, who's, in inverted commas, stepped down. I'm not sure if he's Mark's stepped down.
I think the hands in the back rule might have applied there. He might have stepped down with two hands firmly in the back.
I think so. So they've got a bit to do in the coach's box, I think, Essendon. I'm not saying Wush is not the man for the job. I think he is, but he obviously needs some assistance, and particularly in terms of match day on the run, making decisions on the run. He had a fair bit of that around him at West Coast and it worked, and he needs a fair bit of it around him now.
Yeah, so Phil Walsh, obviously, the late Phil Walsh, was a key to West Coast resurgence in 2011 and 2012 after they bottomed out in 8, 9 and 10. I think if you're going to have John Worsfold as a coach, you need to accept you need the strong tactician alongside him. But the other thing, Quarters, they need to wake up and smell the roses. And this starts with the players.
Yeah, it does.
If you're an Essendon player and you're not putting on strong forward pressure, then you don't belong. Jake Stringer has no tackles on the weekend.
No.
So right now, whatever Jake Stringer brings to the table, he doesn't belong in the AFL. You can't be an AFL forward.
Not now you can't, no.
And have no tackles.
No. It's not hard to run either. You should be fit. You should be able to sustain it. Yep. Are they not fit enough? Well, you would think that. You would hope they would be. But it looks as though they're not, because there's a lack of effort in with the balls coming out the other way.
So they come back into the competition, you know, the band players last year. Is there a case of, you reckon, that they're actually starting to feel the pinch from the
missing
12
a year
months
of
off
footy?
Now? Back last year, they're fresh.
It's a really good point.
They're keen. You know, does some of those, the cold, hard truths of that year away from the game, do some of those start to hit home this second year back?
Well, if you listen to Mike Fitzpatrick today or yesterday, you would say yes. He's come out pretty strongly in terms of the benefit he thinks they got from that year for which they were suspended.
Right.
I think you might be onto something there. I think missing a year of footy, it's the work in the tank that you don't have. You can simulate it as much as you like, but nothing replicates the work on the day. And I think you're right. I think there may be something there.
What about the Blues? First win of the season.
Good on them. And brotherly love too, the Kernos. If one's not tagging, you know, the other one's just kicking goals out of his bottom. Ed and Charlie, they're two players that are going to be around for 10 years for Carlton.
Yep, as long as they don't keep touching umpires, they'll be fine.
They get a Dylan Sheil or someone like that. They need more in the midfield. When they get that, they're going to be some team.
And really, Paddy Cripps had a good game, but he didn't have one of the monster games that we've seen Paddy Cripps have a few times this year. So for them to be able to eke out the win, the other thing it underlines, I reckon, Quarters, is just how critical Matt Kruse is to them.
Yep.
They become a team that's very quickly diluted and weakened if Matt Kruse is.
So how old's Matty?
So he's the same draft as Trent Cotchin.
Yeah.
So basically he should be peaking.
Yeah, he should be. Let's hope his body. He's obviously had issues with his body, a lot of issues with his body over the years. Mm. Or was almost traded at one point as a result. But, look, I just great to see him get a bit of continuity. I mean, he's missed games this year. But, you're right. Very important to them. Who's the kid? They got a good kid coming up underneath, too, haven't they? Is it Phillips?
Yeah, Phillips is. Yeah, it's too early to say how good he is, but he's played a few games when Kruse hasn't been there. Has certainly held his end up.
So, Duff, we sit here having our say. Now, I've just got to plug something here because punters out there can have their say. The West Australian, the Sunday Times and Channel 7 want to hear what you have to say about our great game in the Ultimate Footy Survey. From the coaches to the rules, the umps and the players, we are listening, Duff. Have your say at thewest.com.au/footy survey. And just by completing the survey, you could win a Footy Lovers Prize, a trip to the 2018 Toyota AFL Grand Final. Could be the Eagles, Duff. You never know. So that includes return economy flights for two departing 27th of September, returning 30th of September. Three nights accommodation at the Sofitel Melbourne on Collins. Reserve seating and entry to the MCG Grand Final. Have your say at thewest.com.au/footy survey. Good prize. Have your say.
And I reckon if you are an Eagles supporter, you've got a pretty good chance of going to see your team last day in September. So it's October 1, isn't it, this year?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So what do you make of the Dockers against St Kilda? Quarters?
I felt like it was 30 points in the end.
30 points?
I felt like it wasn't a 30-point win. I thought they almost allowed St Kilda to get back into that game. I had some question marks raised. It's the win they need. Let's be honest, it's the win they needed to have at the end of that week, an horrific week. And if anyone questions whether that had any impact on the players, I that's just nonsense. Of course, it would have had an impact on the players. They needed that win. They got the win. However ugly or unattractive it was, they got the win again on the back of a, Nat 5 special. I'm happy with the tribunal decisions with him. I think he's looking at that, the hip and shoulder, and probably thinking like, yes, I might go back to 2014 round two and have a look at the Riscatelli one.
Because I reckon it's might have two Brownlows.
Yeah, what did he get, 2 weeks for that?
He got 2 weeks.
So there's six votes potentially.
He did get suspended later in the year, which I think the AFL was very relieved
about. Yeah. And obviously the knee to Carlisle's head was as accidental as they get. It was wasn't attractive viewing that one. But look, you know, they did what they needed to do, and Ryan and Blakely gave them good run out of the back half in the absence of others, which was a good sign for them too. Chera continues to show bits and pieces that we know he's going to produce across four quarters in the future. A lot to like about Freo, but I just, obviously that 22 effort wasn't there, and I think they want to improve significantly to be competitive against Sydney this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I did like Ed Langdon's game. I thought Ed Langdon's really maturing nicely into a very, very good midfielder. He sometimes disposal lacks a little bit of polish, but geez, he's a big runner.
Mm.
And he works the wing really well at Optus Stadium. And he was, I thought, behind Fife. I thought he was their second best the other night. I noticed the coaches thought it was probably Aaron Sandilands. I think he finished second in the coaches voting behind Fife. But I thought Ed Langdon was really important. You mentioned Chera. I reckon the left foot goal Chera kicked in the third quarter at a time when Freo needed a steadier. They were getting run down by St Kilda and they kept on turning the ball over, and he found space to his left. And once he found space to his left, having seen him play for only seven games, everybody thought, he'll kick this.
And if you haven't seen it, Freo supporters, don't worry. There's going to be a highlights reel later on in a few years' time. You can spy the DVD. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
And Ross Lyon later said that was all class. And I think that's, we've described Chera like that almost since the time he came in.
We were being told before he came in by people who know, I've got a mate whose son is really good friends with him, and he texted me and said, mate, I'm telling you, this kid's something special. So we were looking forward to seeing what he could produce, and I think he was in round two.
Round two against Essendon.
And we're liking it so far. Keep it up.
So the other thing was, the other thing that Ross Lyon said, he thought Andrew Brayshaw played his best game the other night.
Do you agree with that?
I reckon Andrew Brayshaw, apart from a couple of games where he's dipped a little bit, I reckon he's been a really, really consistent player. Like, I think of all the first-year players, the ones that are eligible for the Rising Star Award, I don't think Brayshaw's even got a nomination yet. I reckon he's almost been the most consistent player.
Yep.
He's just been at a level, and I reckon he was at that level, maybe a little bit higher at the weekend. The guy who's struggling for Freo quarters is Cameron McCarthy. He kicked a goal. Should have kicked two. Should have handballed the second one into the goal square for, I can't remember who was the player in the goal square now, but it was certainly a dolly over the top to a teammate that he didn't miss the shot at goal. Only had about six or seven touches. Looked a bit sore. He's one of those guys who...
Does he work hard enough?
He works to the wrong positions.
Okay. So he works hard enough just to the wrong positions.
As Jack Dyer would say, he gets where the ball ain't too often. And someone like Connor Blakely, he's not quick, he's not particularly stylish, he's a bit rougher. He gets where the ball is, and he does it repeatedly.
Footy smarts.
And Cam, I reckon on his good days, the game comes to him a bit, and on his bad days, he gets where the ball is not. And there was a fair bit of that the other night. And even when he was where the ball was, his opponent had read it better, had read it quicker, was in front of him and was in the better position to either win or halve the contest. So there's a bit of work to do there, I think. I think he misses Matt Tabiner.
Yep.
I think the bigger body alongside him.
So how far is Tabiner away? Be another month at least.
I would say a good month.
There's a pity, as he was coming into some good form.
And Bradley Hill.
Bradley. Giving a false name, you know.
So you're in the leadership group.
Mm-hmm.
You're a reigning best and fairest.
Good timing too, Duff.
Oh,
just immaculate timing, Bradley.
They would have just choked on their yogurt and muesli, wouldn't they? The Freo boys when they heard about that.
Look, I'm not sure he won't. I'm not sure he'll survive the leadership group.
I don't see how he can.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and needs to take stock of it. You know, I mean, these are decisions. We can probably forgive a bloke for having a few beers, but the giving a false name, Bradley, we know who you are. You're in the leadership group. You're best and fairest winner at one of two.
A three-time AFL premiership player.
We know who you are, mate. Sorry.
The younger brother of a very well-known Fremantle player. People are going to recognise you, mate, in Perth.
Yeah, it was like Benny Cousins. You're Ben Cousins. No, I'm not. Bradley, we know who you are.
But no, they got the win. That was what they needed.
Yeah, they did need it.
What was your take on the Saints?
Again, look, though, I just – what my take on the Saints is I reckon they're freaking out without Riewoldt in that forward line.
Mm.
For me, whenever they go forward, I don't know whether they know what to do. They're expecting something else to happen. And I just think that there's a real big hole there that they're going to take a while to fill. And I just don't think the penny's dropped with a lot of them. And that's – I reckon that's their biggest deficiency now. The lack of A graders worries me. Look, this is great. They tried. I'm sounding Ross Lyon here. There was great effort, but I'm just not sure if there's the A grade there to challenge. And I really was concerned watching them go forward. That was my biggest concern.
And they were going forward from a long way back
because
they got absolutely garrotted out of the middle by Sanderlands, Neil and Fife, which meant all their attacks came from halfback. And when you're coming from halfback, you've got to string a lot of possessions together to get into.
I've got a lot of mates who are St Kilda supporters, and I really feel for them because they've been close over the years, but they're a long way back now. Right now, I think.
One guy who played an interesting game the other night was Tim Membry.
Yep.
So he could have had a great game. He could have nearly won them the game. And in the end, he's probably going to go home and feel like he's almost cost them the game.
Yeah.
1-5. And I reckon at least three of the ones he missed should have been kicked.
No, I haven't got the figures with me this week, but their accuracy or inaccuracy is astounding.
And it's in their head now, isn't it?
It is. But, I saw a lot of it over the weekend. There's a lot of... Maybe it's happened for a couple of years now, but there's a lot of goals being missed from 30 straight out in front.
Mm.
And I think that's inexcusable for an AFL player. If certainly from a set shot it is. You look at, in other codes, players who they rely on to kick penalties, to kick conversions, they're not missing too often. And it's a skill that obviously they're not working hard enough on, but surely from 30 in front from a set shot, you shouldn't be missing.
You know what? So the best putters in golf, they have this drill. They put three balls down a metre from the cup and they bang them in.
I've tried it. Doesn't work.
And then they shift them back a foot. The minute they miss one, they go back to a metre and they see how far they can get back. And these are all the ones you should make. I was listening to one of the commentators talk about Luke Bruce's pre-match drill. Luke Bruce doesn't go to the boundary. He doesn't go 50 metres out. He goes 30 metres out directly in front and he kicks goals. And because they're the ones you should kick.
Yeah, and Duff, there's an excuse being made for players that they're concentrating on all other areas of the game now, so they don't have time. Well, yes, you do have time. You don't have to be at training to practice your goal kicking. Goal posts are everywhere. You should be used. You're a professional footballer. You're paid to kick goals from that area. Just practice it as much as you can.
And that, if that is true, that's the method they're pursuing, that we're practicing too many other things to practice.
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying.
That's like a professional golfer, to use the golf analogy again, practicing driving and not chipping and putting.
That's right.
You know, this is, and as they say, you drive for show and you putt for day.
That's right. Yeah.
And Lee Matthews repeatedly says, It is the most important and it is the most ignored statistic
clearly
in footy.
And he was pretty accurate, Lee Matthews, I can tell you. Well, he missed too many.
Well, he kicked 990
Yeah, he
goals.
Did. Yeah, kicked 91 in a season as a Rover forward pocket too. It's not a bad effort.
That was about half as many blokes as he belted.
Yeah, that's right. That yeah. And he got belted too, don't worry. Got plenty. You lay off Lee Matthews. you got any questions this week? I've got one from Scott McGrath. The Eagles seem to have taken another step as a team this year. What has been the key to that? Well, I think Nat Nui's been a very large, big key to that.
And Lysette.
And Lysette, yes, because their ability to win from the get-go brings others into the game. But I think they're very settled too, very, very settled team at the moment.
And sometimes you get a year, and I just get the feeling, and this is why I'm very confident about them in the top four. Sometimes you get a year when they're all just on. You know, they've had their breakout year, then they've had a couple of tread water years. They might have had a slightly disappointing year, and they've all gone away and they've come back and they've gone, no, we're good to go this year. And I think that applies to Shepherd. I think that applies to Darling. I think that applies to Mark Lacroix, who's come back in Ripping Nick. Of course, Nat Nui and Lysette have come back from significant injuries in Ripping Nick. I reckon Shuey and Gaff are in that boat. And, of course, Shannon Hearn's been a great player. McGovern's been a great player.
And you
player.
Have another year, too. So a player like Barris, you know, there's another year in his development as well. And Redden as well. I think that's the key to it as well.
Yeah, so I think I'm very confident they're going to be there when the whips are cracking at the end of the year. We'll be back on Thursday, Quarters, where we'll start
the super game, the game of the century, Richmond West Coast.
Yeah, well,
I'm not sure, but let's talk it up.
We did see a pretty good showdown last week.
Yeah, we did.
let's not set ourselves up for disappointment just yet. But no, it is a big game, a huge game in Perth. If this is not the biggest home and away game in Perth this year, we're in for a hell of a season.
Yeah, it could be a sellout. There's a lot of Tigers out there, and trust me, mate, they're up and about, so they're coming.
So my mate Paul Goff is flying over for
is
the
he?
Game.
Goffy! Oh, okay.
Which means that Richmond can't win, because Goffy could have stopped Farlap.
Yeah, he could have too, you're right.
You realise that a key to Richmond's success last year, I can say this because Goffy's on the plane as we speak, I think, so he might not hear it. Goffy didn't buy a membership. He was so disgruntled with their year.
Did he get to the GF?
He got there.
Oh, thank goodness.
Had to pull a few strings and call in a few favours to get there.
Jeez.
But he didn't buy a membership, and because he got off, Richmond surged.
Did he get by one this year?
Oh, I reckon he did. No, so therefore, at some point, there's going to be an almighty and horrific stumble.
Well, look, there probably will be, but the thing is with Richmond, I think their team, I think they can win. When they're not playing too well.
Yeah, no,
that's
they were,
the key to them.
They were great. That was a great game. The North Melbourne,
by the way,
game
we should give some credit to Ben Cunnington too. He's always been a contested beast, but 32 contested possessions, which is a AFL-VFL record. Yep. Great game at the weekend.
And Ben Jacobs,
yes,
who showed how
the job
to tag Dusty Martin.
Which we'll talk about on Thursday, perhaps. But I'm not sure if the Eagles have got a Ben Jacobs.
Well, you know what he did, though? He played him from behind. There's no don't argues when you're coming from behind.
True. You know, interesting, just before we go, with Jacobs, is I read a piece with Robert Shaw at the weekend where he coached him at junior school, at school level, and he's had Josh Kelly and these types go through, rates him as the best kid who's come through his school. Certainly the most professional, and when they were off having pie night or pizza nights and drinking cake, he'd go home because he didn't agree with the food they were eating. And even in warm-ups, he'd do his own thing because he thought it wasn't to a certain professional standard. So that's a lot of praise from Robert Shaw, particularly putting him ahead of someone like a Josh Kelly.
So this Haley Berry? Was he
I think it was. Yes, it was. Yeah,
okay.
He's been a coach there for 15 years or so, Robert Shaw, for a long time.
I think they're quite a frightening combination too, the Robert Shaw school team.
Oh, they would be.
A bit of nuttiness coming out of the coaches.
Oh, there would be, yeah.
One of the great characters.
Bit of Uncle Arthur.
Bit of Uncle Arthur, yeah. All right, well, thank you very much for joining us today. Join us again on Thursday. We'll run the microscope over round 9 and in particular the blockbuster game at Optus Stadium between Richmond and West Coast on Sunday. It's been great joining you for Tab Touch this morning, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of days.
Look forward to it.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.